The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
Welcome to the program. Dan Huberty is our guest. He's president of MVP REIT, also known as the Parking REIT, and it is a real estate investment trust where Dan Huberty works to acquire income-producing parking assets. We are here to talk parking, its future, its economics, and the investment opportunity that is there in the parking business. Dan Huberty joins us by phone. He's on the road, the open road between Austin, Texas and Houston, Texas. Dan Huberty, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate being here today.
Tell us something interesting or surprising about the parking business.
Yeah, I've been in the parking business now going on 26 years. I was an operator for some of the largest parking companies across the country I've worked for, starting my career with System Parking, ended up with AMCO, then ended up with Central Parking, and finished my career as an operator with SP Plus. And it's been a great career of learning about parking. You know, when I started in the business, they talk about the cigar box, and that's actually how we operated. You know, it was a cash business. And now today, it's completely sophisticated. The technology that's come into the business has really changed dramatically how we collect revenue and how we account for revenue. The iPhones and the apps that have changed our business model has really had a huge impact on controlling cash. And as you know, a long time ago, the business was really cash-centric, and that's how people thought about it. And so people that own parking lots, you know, they might have owned one or two parking lots, and you could always trust your, you know, depending on how many children you had, how much cash was coming into the company. And today, now it's all very sophisticated. And what's really interesting is that from 2015, the economics have changed. There was approximately, and we're talking central business district, only central business district, and that's what our focus is, $22 billion of revenue was coming into parking lots throughout the country. By 2018, it's going to be $28 billion. So it's a growth industry. And that's really dynamic, and that's why we're really excited about our business.
Well, you know, when people think about investing in real estate, they normally don't think about parking. And, okay, so there's this swell of revenue that's coming down the pike. But what's compelling about why parking as an investment? Because there's the revenue, but what about the cost structure and all else that goes with it?
Well, I would say this. You know, when I've moved to wherever I've lived throughout the country, and I've moved all over the country in my career, and you go to a dinner party and you start talking to people about what do you do for a living, and I always tell people, I said, I park cars for a living. And they're like, well, what does that mean? And I said, well, you know, when you go down to the Houston Astros game and you're going to the game and you're trying to figure out where you're going to park, you don't think about anything other than you just want to park your car and you want to get to the game. And the economics associated with what does that cost to park, it doesn't come into play. Because the cost structure for us to run a surface lot or a garage is very, very low basis. You know, it's a very simple business model. We own the inventory. So you think about CVS or a Walgreens or something like that, they have to be able to have the box to put all their inventory in to be able to sell their product. Well, we already have the product. And the product is the spaces between the lines. And that's a very unique opportunity. And so when people figured out what I did for a living, and I had my friends always come to me and say, hey, I'm going to the Astros game. What should I do? Where should I park? And I said, well, we got a great parking lot down there. And they said, great. You know, can I get free parking? I said, there's no such thing as free parking. Everybody's got to pay. And people understand that. And so what we focused on is our core businesses looking at the downtown parking environment to make sure that we get a mass of parking spaces in a particular area so that we're able to look at pricing to make sure that we can control our inventory. And that's really what we focus on.
So, you know, there are real estate experts who talk about the United States being over-retailed. We just have too much retail in this country. And they were saying that before e-commerce ever came along. Now, do we have the same issue with parking? Are there too many parking spaces in the United States? And I know that in the central business district, sometimes it can be very difficult to find a spot. But what I see oftentimes, Dan, is people complaining about parking. They'll pull into a vast parking lot, and what they're really complaining about isn't that there's any spots available, is that they want to park closer. They'll sit there and wait for somebody to pull out so they don't have to take a very long walk. Are we over parking lotted in the United States?
What's happened, which has been very interesting, is that the change of downtown parking in the United States is going away. And so what we're seeing is for us, and what we're focusing on, again, is the central business districts. But you look at a market like Houston, Texas, as an example. So around the Minute Maid Park, the courthouse area, we've lost roughly about 1,500 parking spaces to new developments. And what's happening is the mixed use that's going in there, the apartments are being developed. They're building those on parking lots, or they're building those on parking garages. It's much cheaper to tear down a parking garage to build a 40-story building than it is to tear down an old building. And you have historical things that are happening in cities as well, where cities are trying to preserve their old buildings, and so they won't let you do that. And so what we're seeing today is a regeneration of downtowns in the four central business districts that is very unique. So you now have the millennials that are deciding that, you know, they're getting married later. They like to live downtown. And in fact, if you look at the suburban office market business, and I'm a little older, and that used to be the deal that was happening, where they would build these suburban complexes out there and everybody would work out there. Now people want to live in downtown. They want to work in downtown. And so what's happening is that the land that we own and the garages that we own become a real estate play for us. And our goal is to continue to acquire surface lots, parking facilities, and areas within these in downtowns that make sense for potentially future developments. And we think this is a great opportunity for investors to look at, you know, and for us, for our company, but also for anybody else that owns those things and parking lots to continue to grow that business model that way. What's really unique, in addition to the millennials, is that the baby boomers and people that are, you know, empty nesters are also moving in downtown. And so they're not coming downtown without a car. And so they have to park someplace. So as the parking spaces are going away and we're not over-parked, it allows the pricing to increase. So remember what I said earlier is that from 2015, the revenue stream was $22 billion. We're going to go to $28 billion. And we're continuing to see that growth in revenue, which is really important.
What is the key to a successful parking lot or parking structure, or as we called them back in the Northeast when I was growing up, parking ramps? And I asked that, Dan, because, you know, there are a lot of people who find parking structures, parking lots, to be a little bit frightening, depending on the part of town it's in, depending on the time of day. They need some oversight, let's put it that way. What is the key to having a successful, profitable, and maximized parking structure?
You know, as a guy that's operated parking lots for years and had to sell to owners to convince them to hire me to run their parking lots, the most important thing is to create a safe, secure, well-lit, clean environment. That's the most important thing. You know, a woman working in a downtown environment who's, you know, working late, wants to be able to go into a garage. The elevators work. There's good lighting. There's security. They feel safe. It's clean. It's not dirty. And that's really the key to success. And that's really the way that you should think about when you own real estate in a downtown environment. Would you park your $70,000 car in a gravel parking lot with a bunch of potholes, or would you park across the street and maybe pay a dollar or two more for a parking lot that is paved, well-lit, secured, looks right, landscaped correctly? Those are the things that make a difference in real estate, in my mind. And so I think that the differentiating factor is that when you're able to do that, it makes a big difference. Now, what's been very interesting that's changed in the political climate is that the cities that we work with and other people work with in the parking space have also looked at that and said, look, we need to have standards for our parking facilities in our parking lots. And they have to be landscaped, they have to be well lit, they have to be secured, and they have to be clean. And so those are the important things, I think, that people have to look for. So when we look for opportunities, we look for those opportunities that maybe the lot doesn't look right and it's not paved right or it's not well lit. Because that makes a difference. You know, you have a first time to make a first impression. And those are the things that we focus on. And those are things that people should focus on when they look at companies like ours.
Among the arguments against parking lots is that they're visually unattractive and that they cause a lot of runoff. In the event of rain, there's runoff. And, of course, there's the oil and grease drippings from cars. And that goes running off and into nearby waterways and such. So one's an aesthetic argument and one's a substantive argument. What do you say about that? Is that you had mentioned that some cities talk about aesthetics. And I don't know if you guys or most people who are in the professional parking business invest in open lots where you do have runoff, or if all of yours is structured parking, whatever the case may be. What do you have to say about that, Dan?
Well, I'll take the second part first, which is the, you know, when you think about the environmental impact from a parking lot, you know, the key is making sure that you have proper drainage, making sure that you're dealing with the city on their environmental codes or the state's codes, whatever those are, to make sure that it's kept well and it's clean. And then making sure that your operator, whoever your operator might be, whether it's SP Plus or it's ABM or Denison Parking or Premier or Premium, those are the guys that are professional operators, that they're keeping up with the standards related to making sure that they have their certificate of occupancy. And that's really a key, is that most cities now have ordinances related to getting a certificate to be able to operate it as a parking lot or a parking garage, making sure that it's being well taken care of, making sure that if you're parking in a garage that the elevators are running properly, lighting is correct. Those are really key. On the aesthetic piece of it, you know, a parking lot is a piece of dirt. There's only so many things that you can do to it. But making sure that it's well paved, the lines look right, the space numbers are correct, you're not trying to, you know, take advantage of somebody that didn't see what space number they were trying to put it in the machine. And then again, the cities will determine the landscaping ordinances. But our goal as a company is that they're clean, they're painted, they look right, and they're being well taken care of. And that makes a huge difference when people are looking at a place that they want to be able to park.
There are those who say that the coming age of autonomous vehicles in the future of auto ownership becoming, for instance, there's talk of fractional ownership, there's talk of subscription services where people won't actually own a car because it sits idle 90% of the time anyway, and there's a lot of cost involved. And depending on how a person lives or where they live, it might make more sense to have a fractional ownership or subscription service. And that we would, if that comes to pass, that we'd need vastly fewer parking spaces than we currently have. Now, being that you guys are in the business, do you have any forecasts that suggest that will actually come to pass? We could see a substantial reduction in the amount of parking that's necessary in an urban core?
We've spent a lot of time on this. This is a question we get from investors all the time and people that ask questions. And what we've done is we've worked with professional organizations like Walker Parking that's come and really has done the studies and the analysis associated with that. So the question, I would ask you a question. What do you believe in 2005, 10 years ago, was the forecast this year to be the amount of electric cars that were going to be on the road by this time, as a percentage? What would you think that number would be? Just the best guess.
Oh, I don't know, maybe 5%?
They were forecasting 10%. It is less than 1% right now. Mm-hmm. It's 0.9% of electric cars. So the you think about that technology of where that's been. Now, autonomous cars have different levels. You go from L1 to L5, and you think about L5 being the, you know, you're sitting in the back seat, you know, don't have to do anything. You hit a button, you get out of the car. And so what we've seen over the last the bunch of different analysis that's come out is that by we're talking 2060, they're talking less than 20% of the cars could potentially be autonomous. Now, there's going to be people that may dispute that and say I'm wrong, but we've studied this and looked at this. We're not suggesting for one second that we don't believe there's going to be autonomous cars. They're on the road today. We get that. We understand that. But as a guy that lives in Houston, Texas, I work in Las Vegas, and you think about that, you think about the urban sprawl of where people want to live and where they're going to continue to work in downtown environments, where is that car going to go when it drops me off at work? That's not going to go back home. It's going to go someplace. It's got to park someplace. Special events. And we've seen this again, you know, going to the Super Bowl as your example in Houston, Texas, when we had Uber was out there. You know, the line to be able to get a taxi or Uber, you know, is 5 or 6 hours. And so the biggest buyer of cars last year, by far, was millennials at over 4 million cars a year. And so people are not going to get rid of their cars. It's just going to change the dynamics of that. And again, we're focused on buying real estate in the core, the central core, next to courthouses, next to special event arenas, in the core central business district. And as parking continues to decrease in these markets because of the buildings that's happening and people wanting to live downtown, we're very bullish on continuing to look at parking as a very opportunistic environment. And I would also say to you is that if you think about transit, you know, forget the autonomous car for a second, but where's the best transit in the market? The best transit, if you think about it, is places like Chicago, New York, Seattle, San Francisco. Where's the highest parking rates on a monthly basis and a daily basis? New York, Chicago, San Francisco, Seattle, some of the highest parking rates of the country. So we are continuing to look at that, but we understand that the technology is there, and we're embracing that. We're going to look at that and say those cars is not going to drive somebody from 40 miles away and just drive back home. They're, you know, and maybe it's going to use some other different mechanism to do that. To be able to go somewhere else and be deployed. But if that car's got to be somewhere during the day, it's going to be in one of our parking lots.
So speaking of technology, how are parking structures and parking technology going to change in the future? What's some of the things that we can look forward to, Dan? What do you see on the horizon in terms of more high-tech parking facilities?
You know, as I mentioned earlier in the conversation, I've been in the business a very long time, and the technology's changed. We went from a gate and a cash register in some cases not even a cash register, just a time clock machine that would stamp a ticket and give it to you, where the, you know, depending if the cashier in the booth was honest or not, he might resell that ticket from time to time, to a completely automated system where we have machines that are in the lot that have a connection to the parking space where there's a Wi-Fi system that's in that parking space that coordinates directly with the machine that lets us know that somebody's actually parked in that space and whether they paid or not. I'm just amazed over the years, and again, probably showing my age, to the degree that the technology has changed over the years. But what I see happening is I was involved several years ago in Galveston, Texas, and how do they collect money for beach parking after Hurricane Ike in 2008? We actually were working with the city and came up with an idea that said, look, you don't have to deploy machinery. What you do is you use a phone. And there's companies like Park Mobile as an example that everything's done on your phone. And you put in a number based on the area that you're in. You put your license plate number in. And then a car drives by with a license plate recognition system that identifies that you've actually paid or you haven't paid. And if you haven't paid, then the police will come and, you know, cite your violation because you haven't paid that particular parking ticket. We're seeing more and more of that technology coming on the enforcement side of it. On the revenue side of it, it's the same way. There's the groups that are out there. Again, you think about Park Mobile or Park Me or Park Spot, that are selling your parking spaces online. I believe as we go forward, you're going to see more of that technology be out there when you're going to a downtown environment. where do you want to park, and the economics associated with that. You're putting that up onto your phone, and everything's going to be on your phone and how you pay for it. Also, you're having technology with the cars. They're integrating with Ford, BMW, General Motors. They all have a place. If you look at your nav system in your car, and I believe every system will have a nav system tied to your credit card, you're going to be able to pay for it, you know, through your navigation system as we go forward. And we're continuing to work with those companies and our operating partners to be on that cutting edge of technology. We think that's very important for the future of parking.
From a cost, maintenance, and revenue standpoint, Dan, how does parking, how do parking structures fare vis-a-vis other forms of real estate?
Focus on the parking surface lots for a second, because the economics associated with that is very, very low. You know, you know, from time to time, you'll have, you know, resurfacing and seal coating and striping your lots, which are, you know, once every 3 years as an example. So the basis on that is very, very low. The equipment's lasting much longer. And as I said earlier in the conversation, you know, we believe that we're going to be able to go to more of a sophisticated handheld computing to be able to collect your revenue associated with that. We still have the pay and display systems on the lots, which, you know, replace the old honor box. You know, you probably, like I have, you know, at one time or another, you know, stuffed money into a slot. Well, those are all gone. So that cost basis is very low. Now, when you get into garages, you know, you still have capital requirements, and you look at a garage depending on when it's built. And garages today, you know, if it's a standalone garage with nothing built above, it's a prefab garage. Cost basis might be $20,000 of parking space, and you look at it, you know, from our perspective, we look at it about $25 a space a year for reserves, depending on the size of the space. But from a real estate comparative perspective, if I lose a tenant or a monthly parker, I replace that parker with somebody else, and there's no TIs associated with that. So there's no capital expenditure to replace the tenant that already parked there. So the goal is to make sure that you have good operators that are making sure they have a good maintenance program, making sure they're cleaning up those oil spots, as you had mentioned earlier, making sure that they're keeping the elevators running correctly. I think there's the cost basis is very low comparative to other forms of real estate. You know, if a tenant is in an office building, and they had been there for 10 years, and I've got to replace that tenant in that space, you're negotiating TIs, and TIs might be $30 a square foot, $40 a square foot, $50 a square foot, depending on what it is. That's not the same way that parking works. Parking is a very simplistic business in the sense that you don't have that big CapEx associated with that. When we look at real estate, when we're buying it, whether it's a parking garage or a parking structure, that's one of the first things we look at is what's the condition of the facility, how does it look, how much money it needs to be put in, and we'll put the money in at the beginning of it to make sure that we have the useful life of it to go to 30 to 40 years.
We've all been in parking lots and structures whose design did not make any sense. It's confusing, not sure if we're heading towards the exit or not.
Sure.
Signage is poor. But my question is, and I don't know that you guys ever, at some point somebody built the structure. Is there any kind of architectural design or science that makes for especially utilitarian and free-flowing parking situations? Is there any, I'm just curious whether there's any real science or architectural standards. Obviously, there's some standards, but there are a lot of parking structures that are confusing. What about that? Is there any science to this?
You know, And you know what, we've owned some garages that we bought that have had those problems over the years, and we understand that. And so, you know, signage is one of the keys to making sure that you can get people in and out of your facility appropriately. Again, making sure that it's painted, clean, and well kept. That's important to be able to do that. But you know what has happened over the years is that the way architects looked at things was that they were building a building and they said, oh, by the way, we have to have parking, and there's going to be, you know, 300 parking spaces, and it's going to be on a 20,000 square foot block. And by the way, you can't afford speed ramps. Speed ramps would be outside ramps outside the structure. And so you might do a scissor garage, or you might do a diagonal garage or horizontal garage, and where you're parking up one way and coming down the other way. And it just depends on the footprint. That's really what it comes down to. It depends on the size of the real estate. But you can have a well-flowed garage with a scissor garage as long as you have good signage and you're making sure that you understand how to get people in and out. Traffic flow is so critical of parking structures. But if you have a captive audience that's attached to a building, it's a captive audience. You work in that building and it's a 300,000 square foot building and you have a 200 space parking garage. You know, people are going to be able to figure that out on a day-to-day basis. It's the standalone garages that really make a difference in how they're built and how they're designed. And we work with firms like Walker Parking or Walter P. Moore, to make sure that our garages, as we purchase them, are designed and laid out properly. And you can make a lot of changes to make sure that the flow of traffic is right. You know, relaying out your parking spaces. You might have 45-degree angled spaces or 90-degree angled spaces or straight-in spaces, depending on what they're looking like. And you can look at how you can flow your traffic a little better and pick up spaces. So I'll give you a great example. We had a parking facility that we ended up purchasing in St. Louis, and it was laid out incorrectly. You know, the spaces were going vertical, and we changed it to horizontal. We picked up about 7% more parking spaces by just doing that. It improved the traffic flow, was able to get people in and out. And that's the most frustrating thing. You never want to be in a space where you can't get it in and out of it.
You know, Dan, I probably wouldn't ask this of any other guy, but you are driving right now. And when you get to the end of your drive, you're going to park your car. Are you going to park your car headlights in first or tailpipe first?
I will go headlights first. I'm going to go headlights first.
Okay.
But I'm going to go home. I'm going to go home. So I'm going to park headlights first.
Okay, but in a parking, if you're in a parking garage, you would park the same way with headlights first.
Well, actually, you know, I it's interesting. It depends. I travel 200 plus days a year, and I park at airports all the time. I actually back into my parking space at the airport because I'm able to have the time to be able to do that. I do the same at church every week because I want to make sure that everybody leaves at the same time and I want to get out. So if I go to a special event type situation, a baseball game, football game, or I go to church or someplace like that, I will always back into the parking space because I want to be able to get out. So I don't have to back into traffic to be able to do that. And if you have an operator in a special event arena, they will actually guide you in appropriately so they can get the traffic flow out. But it depends on the parking garage or the lot that you're in of how you're going to get out. And so it depends on how many people are coming in and out and how much transient activity people coming in and out of how you would park.
Well, you know, because I know in some countries, I have a friend who travels to China fairly regularly, and he says they ask, why do you guys in America park head first when it's, if you would back into this spot, it's easier to get out. Is there any best practices as far as that goes, or are you, it sounds like it's situational. You're certainly
in
a situation.
I think it's really situational. Again, you know, the lots that we own, our company owns, that are around special event arenas and things of that nature, that it changes actually from a daily transaction to a special event transaction. And it depends on how many people are coming out. You know, we've got a line of traffic of, 20 cars coming in. You're just trying to park the cars to get them off the street. But if you have the time to be able to park them appropriately, you would always, want to try and back people in so they can get out and you don't have people backing into traffic. You know how frustrating that is, right? You know, you're trying to get out of a parking space and nobody will let you out. It's all dependent on the nature of how that structure works. And I think it's preference. You know, if you have time to be able to back in, then you'll do that. Absolutely.
Well, Dan, the next time I have trouble finding a parking spot or I feel like I'm overcharged, I'm going to think of you. Not because it's your company, but because we had this discussion. I do appreciate you taking the time, especially on the road like you are right now, to visit with
you
us
bet.
And kind of walk
you,
us through
you
this.
Bet.
And best
you
of
bet.
Luck to you. Drive safe.